Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and we stream live at richarddugan.com. The radio show's page is where you'll find the archives to this program, podcasts, whatever you want to call them. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We're trying to understand the world in which we live, trying to better understand how we can foster a greater inner life that will help hopefully impact and improve our outer life and outer world. And so we encourage you to stay with us. We actually have in studio today a guest who is a local Santa Barbaran. She is, a television anchor of sorts on her own program on public access, dealing with metaphysical, spiritual issues, activist issues, and so forth. And we're going to talk about a lot of different things in that regard here on the program. Susanna Obando is my guest. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program.
Happy to be here.
It's a little different for you. No cameras.
Yes, no cameras. and no retaking.
What's that?
And no retakes.
That's right. We're going to go straight on through and just kind of have a conversation about a lot of different things. How did you get involved with this subject matter and creating this television program? Because you have a wide variety of people on talking about so many different subjects.
Yeah. I started as a photographer and eventually I ended up getting into theater. But I've always been a performance artist at heart, did dance since I was little. And so while I did multimedia and graphic design, I got involved in the spiritual and maintained my love for the performance arts. And I kind of realized that to get the information that you wanted out there, you needed to pay like $500, $1,000 for just basic information. And so that eventually became kind of a passion of I wanted people to get the information they needed. And then the show kind of evolved on its own thing. It kind of became its own thing where it became something more about spirituality, but also activism and just getting different perspectives out there, because I felt that people just needed to hear that humanity is very unique and has very different expressions all over the world, and they're all equally as beautiful. And you need understanding is just what's needed to just build some kind of tolerance or appreciation.
And obviously in the last few years we've needed that more than ever before, it seems. And it's not necessarily pinned on one in particular individual. There are even studies that are now starting to show that the whole social media arena, the responsibility for the decline, if you will, or the fracturing of our society is laid at the feet of social media. Because it's anything but social, right?
Well, yeah, because there is, I would have to say with social media, there is some kind of dissociation because you're not really doing a one-on-one with a person. So it's kind of like you have this metal wall beside you and you don't really see the person. So you kind of have this impersonal attitude towards them. So you kind of feel like you can say whatever you want versus when you go to a person face to face, a lot of things you wouldn't say online, you definitely wouldn't say in person. I know some people wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So there is that distance that is lacking in that social standing. Yeah. But also it's like with new algorithms and codings and that are going on and CEOs and not CEO, SEOs and keywording, people who makes accounts on Facebook or different things start tagging keywords, and those codes memorize those things and memorize those likes. So you start getting the stuff that you want to see. So it kind of builds like what is now called echo chambers on your social media.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I tell you, it's one of those things that is extremely frustrating. And I will tell you that I used to belong to you consider it a social media site. I do not have a Facebook account. Mm-hmm. I do have a Twitter account, but I very rarely, if ever, go there. But I was on a new app that's been out for, I guess, a few years, and it's called Nextdoor. Mm-hmm. And up where I live, there are a lot of folks that are signed on to it. And during this fire that we experienced in December 2017, I was just hearing a lot of whining and complaining. And I know that we were all under a great deal of stress and tension and frustration over lack of information, too much information, not understanding the information. And I got to the point where I said, you know what? I'm done. I'm tired of the whining. And I actually put this in the thing I put out. I said, I'm tired of the whining and the sniveling. I can't take it anymore. You guys are on your own. Goodbye. And I deactivated my account and I'm not on there anymore because it was more frustrating to receive these things, these negative comments, which is also the reason when I dropped off and I let Nextdoor know that. Just too many negative comments. Yes, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I get that. Mm-hmm. But I don't have to listen to it.
No, that's true. Like, you don't have to listen to it. And, you know, and I get it. A lot of the ranting is coming out of worry, but I think it's also like personal responsibility. And the funny thing is, like, a friend that I was doing a study session with, we went into this elaborate discussion on how that when you go to spiritual groups or even seeing with the social media is that people put information out there, they whine and they complain, but they don't ever do something about it. And then it comes to that maybe right now in this day and age, there's a lot of lack in personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you know, you've heard the stories that have come out, especially out of Hollywood, complaints about being bullied on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I even was talking with this one woman through another social media site called LinkedIn. And we actually got on the phone and chatted a little bit, and she wanted to tell a story about how she had been harassed by some Hollywood individual, an actor, and on her Facebook account.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally blocked her on both LinkedIn as well as my phone because all she wanted to do was whine about that. And I'm thinking, there's a simple solution. Deactivate your Facebook account and then go start another one under another name or something. And that's it's like people don't seem to understand. It is not something that's permanent. I had a Facebook account, and it took 7 days to go through their process of deactivation, but I went through it. It was no big deal. I don't have one. I don't want one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like for example, you and I, here we are, we're having a conversation,
mm-hmm.
and I start saying things to you that you really don't care for.
Mm-hmm.
You just get up and walk away, right?
Well, yeah, that's what you can do, or you could choose to respond. It's right there is more what you do and how you react.
Yeah.
Though, like, again, nowadays, because along with critical thinking, there's a lot of things that are missing because, like, there are things, like, some people take things that you say for literal instead of doing the research. Like, what you think of me, it's like, well, why would I care a complete stranger's opinion of me? In the end of the day, I'm going to be Suzanne. I'm going to live my life. So what you say?
Yeah.
That's an approach you can have. But I also understand that, you know, some people are sensitive and it's hard to deal with that. And then I know there are like medical issues and mental health issues that, you know, that make it hard to deal with situations like that. But at that point, it's also is if you are in those people who have those situations, it's also taking the precaution to create your medical team and your mental health team and take care of yourself. And I know that's also hard. So like I can see where that person's coming from. If you have a hard time dealing with and you were already abused and you haven't had the help you need, and then there's this extra thing by you, I can understand why it would drive you off the wall. But I also understand, I'm like, there's things you can do.
Yeah.
So there, like, I get both points of view.
Yeah. It's interesting, too. I have worked for years at news talk and information stations, and I actually try my best to stay away from the news because mm-hmm. it becomes, and in the last few years, it's become even more frustrating to listen to all of the stuff that's going on and the accusations of, you know, is this accurate information or is this inaccurate information? And you can't trust this group and you can trust that group and on and on and on. And I mean, honestly, it comes down, from my perspective, it comes down to this. I might see on the news a story about an event that took place, you know, let's say in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that that really happened because it's possible to create all kinds of stuff through CGI and all kinds. I mean, a Photoshop, you can create all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't there. Now, if you were there and you're saying it happened, who am I to contest that it happened? Because you were there and you're an eyewitness to it. But I wasn't. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that it really happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really how far we've, I'd say, deteriorated in our society with all of these kinds of things going on. So let's bring it back. Mm-hmm. What about your center, mm-hmm. you know, for you? How do you maintain your equilibrium internally and spiritually, mentally, emotionally as well, when you're bombarded by so much that's going on? And then in terms of sharing that with other people through the television program that you host?
Oh, well, like, I guess my approach to my spirituality, I kind of just see it like art, that it's going to change whether I want it to or not. It's whether my reaction to the change is really going to affect how I'm going to enjoy that change. Like, and that's okay. Like, maybe for me, I feel spirituality should evolve along with you, because as a human through life, you evolve. So obviously the same spirituality you had and attitude is not always going to fit. Like, the attitude I had when I was 18 is definitely not going to fit me at 24. And so I kind of approach my spirituality with that approach, as like, I have my beliefs and my convictions, and, you know, they're mine, but it doesn't mean that I can't listen to someone and appreciate where they're coming from and kind of take off my coat of my spirituality and just wear their coat for a little while and trying to see their point of view. And it doesn't mean it suddenly invalidates my spirituality. And if there's something that I really, truly resonate with them that I do want to include in my spirituality, I do. And if I don't, it's like, well, thank you. I really enjoyed. And hopefully it helps someone out there that it does resonate with, even if it doesn't resonate with me.
Mm-hmm. What's the name of the program that you host?
Alternate Perspective.
Alternate Perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. And how did that come about? How did you come into, so to speak, possession of that television program?
Okay, like the television program or the name, because the name came about is I already had the idea of the program that once it evolved into like I wanted to expose different perspectives out there. I talked to my best friend at a coffee shop, and she goes like, it sounds like you want to approach it by showing people's different alternate perspective. I'm like, that's a perfect name. That's what it should be, because that's what it is. It's all things alternative and community driven. Mm-hmm. I want that out there, and it's different people's perspective. It's the alternate perspective. It's not just, oh, here's something completely different and invalidates your stuff. It's like, no, your stuff is still valid, but here's an alternate.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think that's important, that it also is in that name, that it doesn't invalidate who's listening, because right. I'm not trying to invalidate anyone's beliefs or spirituality or approach to life, because in the end of the day, whatever you do with your life is your own business and your own consequences go with it. I am not included in what you do, but I do want to expose people to different approaches.
It sounds an awful lot like what we're doing on this program, giving people choices and knowledge of those choices mm-hmm. to help make their dreams come true. We're looking for those new paradigms.
Mm-hmm.
I've often used the analogy that we do have a lifeboat. This lifeboat will hold 7.5-8 billion people.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one, I guess you could use the word caveat.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be willing to let go of the old ways of doing things, because they don't work. They're not working today. We are trying to come up with new ways of doing things, of thriving. It's enough. I think a lot of folks have really gotten tired of the whole aspect of just surviving from day to day. I would think that here we are in the 21st century, that we would have evolved to that level of thriving in our lives, really accomplishing stuff. And yet we look around us and we're still dealing with a lot of the same issues that we have dealt with for, well, I guess you could say centuries.
Well, yeah. And I think what we all forget is like to account for human error, because there will always be human error. We're not perfect. And mm-hmm. that means that no matter how many people learn the lesson and try to make things progress, there'll be still room for human error and people who are not ready for that. And you know what? It's totally okay to not be ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's important to just expose it a little bit, because you may not be ready for the to do it, but it's okay to hear the information and try to understand it. Hmm. Because you can never really force people to do what you want. You could only cater the situation where it's more likely that they're willing to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, this whole business of living our lives and doing what we do and trying to make the world a better place, because my belief is that regardless of your perspective, your attitude is that I just want to make the place a better, I want to make this world a better place. And I say this a little facetiously, basically I want to create the world in my image, mm-hmm. you know, and my thought process and so forth and so on. But we all can't do that mm-hmm. to the entire city or state or country or world, because everybody, again, this is the reason why we have all these conflicts that we have.
No.
But it is possible to, as you say, to listen to and acknowledge where people are coming from. And who knows, maybe they're little bits and pieces of what they want to do, the vision that they see, that could be incorporated into the overall. Maybe not everything.
Mm.
And so it's a question of drawing people in to the conversation, to the planning, and not just saying, this is the way we're doing it, and that's just too bad if you don't like it. Now, there are certain situations where you can't have everybody's input. It'll take too long.
Yeah.
And by the time you finally came to a consensus, whatever the situation is that you were trying to deal with, it's either over or it's overtaken you and your community. For example, wildfires.
Yeah.
You have to have central command. You have to have a hierarchy that knows what they're doing. And I was really impressed with the discussion, or at least the explanation of the way in which that is done, where they bring some of the best people in from around the country to discuss this plan A, plan B, plan C, D, E, and F. And then they run it through the filters of these people who know what they're doing. And if they all tend to agree that, yeah, this plan will work, it's, as far as fires go, it's relatively safe. You know, we can accomplish this. And so as long as certain conditions are maintained. And then they go about doing that. In the military, it's the same way. You can't have a democratic process in the military. If you're going to go to battle, mm-hmm. you can't have everybody doing their own thing. You won't accomplish a thing. You can't have everybody doing their own thing in a firefight, fighting a wildfire, because you'll have people dying and the fire will just consume.
Yeah.
And spread. So there are certain situations where, you know, you've got to allow for that. And certainly even in government, I think there is a certain element of that. But I think one of the things that we've all been sort of frustrated mm-hmm. by government, whether it's local, state, or national, is the ramrodding of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, this is the way we're doing it, whether you like it or not. And if you don't like it, then you must be anti-state or nation, you know, or anti-species, anti-human, whatever. It's like, no. I just don't think you've thought this through. I think that you haven't taken into consideration da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, there used to be a time I used to say, we study things to death.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're not doing much studying anymore. We're just making knee-jerk decisions.
I agree that people are not studying the situation, because I understand there are very valid ideas out there, but mm-hmm. The whole point of the political system, of having a two-party system, even though I am not the most thrilled about the two-party system, but the original planning of a two-party system is that you have two opposing groups that propose their ideas, but eventually come to a compromise. That's how it's supposed to
mm-hmm.
function.
Yeah.
But there is, right now, the problem with that system is everybody wants their way and no one's letting down to come to a compromise. And that's what's wrong right now politically, is that no one's giving anyone a chance to even speak. And then we're always seeing each other as more as a statistic and less as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
we become very impersonal with our politics because you're not, because like there are people like, you know, I agree, disagree with a lot, but I still talk to them. I still am friends with them. I still drink water or go out to dinner with them. I don't dislike them. I definitely have debated with some of them and actually come to a compromise, like one-on-one. But the problem is, like, how do you one-on-one make a one-on-one on a large scale?
Mm-hmm.
Where yeah. these very opposing forces actually take the time to listen and come into a compromise. Because the problem right now is that no one's willing to listen. Everyone's sticking their fingers in their ears and going, la, 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 I can't hear you. And then it's like, yeah. well, nothing's going on. We're just in a stalemate, I guess. And yeah. that's not helping anyone.
Yeah. And then, of course, you have the cycle. Every 4 years, we elect someone. And if it's of the opposing party, they go in there. They undo everything of the last guy. And for that 4 years, they implement their way of doing things. Then the next guy that's elected from the other side, he comes in and he undoes everything from the last guy and then implements his stuff. And every 4 or 8 years, we keep going through this cycle. We're not getting anywhere. We're not moving forward as a society, as a people. And that's frustrating a lot of folks. And they feel alienated. They feel disenfranchised. They feel as though they don't care about me out there. So I'm not going to care about them. And I'm not even going to participate in the process because they don't care. And and my participating in the process doesn't seem to matter because we go through that back and forth cycle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, I understand that that's the way that it is. But why do we take the position that that's the way it always has to be?
Well, I agree. I think there is something flawed in this system because I have to be honest, I didn't vote till I was 18, till the major kind of election.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't even vote when I was 18. The last election with like Trump and Bernie and Hillary mm-hmm. is the first time I ever voted because I felt exactly the way you described it. I didn't feel that anything was being done and that my vote didn't matter and that nothing was hurt. I didn't agree with any of them completely and that my voice was not heard. So I just opt out essentially until like the last election. But then with seeing how everything kind of blew up in all of our faces,
yeah.
right, left, in between, or whatever color you guys want to be.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah. Yeah.
We have to admit that for all of us, wherever we may stand, that election kind of blew up on all of our faces.
Yeah. Well, the thing that was frustrating for me, and this must have been an interesting paradox for you to have to deal with the subject matter you deal with, mm-hmm. before the election was ever held, the accusation was made that the election was rigged.
Mm-hmm.
And the one who made the accusation is the one who won it. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, wait a minute. If the election is rigged and you won, then the election was rigged and you won. So there's something, in other words, the critical thinker in me says you can't have it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I know that this is one of the problems that we have, like I said earlier, about information coming in from so many sources. Which ones do you trust? Which ones do you say are accurate and which ones do you say are not accurate? Mm-hmm. And yes, there have been false statements made. There have been false stories written and so forth. You know, and some of the folks, they've been called out. Some of the people who've written these stories, they've acknowledged their mistake and they've made corrections and, mm-hmm. and so forth. They've apologized. And that happens. We're human. That's like what you said earlier. You have to account for human error.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of incorporating one's spiritual life into all of this, how do you balance that out as you go through your day in terms of, I don't know, you do filter some of this out? Do you try not to listen to too much? Or do you inundate and then you process and then move forward? How do you stay sane?
How I stay sane? Well, I think it's very important to take all the information, even the things that you dislike. Like, that's what I've been trying to do with my show. That's what I've been trying to do with myself. Because to me, a very important approach to me and that I've told to people is like, you can do things and just study the stuff, but you don't really get to know what you're doing until you fully immerse yourself in the actual goal that you're trying to do. And my goal is that I'm trying to bring different perspectives and understand them to for other people to do that. So I should be able to do it for myself. So I've been like, so one way I've been doing this, I've been going to this club at SBCC called the Open Mind Club. And we get people of different perspectives, liberal, conservative, you know, all the things. And we talk about different topics, subjects, some about philosophy, some about political, some of the environment, and you name it, we try to discuss it and we hear all these different perspectives, but we try to create a very copacetic space where everyone's debating. We try to come in a compromise. Some people don't, but we all, in the end up, we agree to disagree or we come to a compromise and we listen to these different perspectives. And so that's the way I've been doing it. Mm-hmm. I've been just putting myself in positions where, as I put, my mind might be slightly uncomfortable, but that uncomfortableness will grow and make my mind more flexible and more open to different things, or at least more understanding with things. Just like when you work out, you go to the gym and that weight is going to feel really annoying and it's going to hurt, but eventually your muscles will get used to it.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that was what I was just thinking. You dive right in there and you put yourself in the fray, and that actually strengthens you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. What are some of the top subjects that you like to cover and talk about on the program?
To be honest, I've always been a person, I've been doing this since I was 14. I love reading and studying different spiritualities. That's just like my bread and butter. The hardest has been getting into the political. Because, you know,
it's people, a religion of its own, so to speak, too.
Yeah, and people get riled up, and then you say the wrong thing, and they kind of want to just eat your head for dinner. And I'm like, I happen to like my head where it is, so no thank you. And so I've been very, like, I put myself out there. I put more political stuff. Like, the last episode, we did bisexual awareness because I'm queer, and so I thought that's a conversation to have. And then I also did an MLK panel. I'm also going to have Mark McIntyre come on the show and talk about philosophy, mm-hmm. and Catholicism, and just getting different activists and spiritual things out there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get more activist stuff out there so I can get used to it. And so I'm trying to get more conservative views that I can talk to. And I've been doing that. Like, I'm going to have the Open Mind Club bring stuff about echo chambers on the show, that's what I'm trying to do. But like, my favorite has always been spiritual, because I just find it really fascinating what people believe in and what drives them and how it helps them. And like, and I may not even believe in it at all, what they tell me, but it, you know, if it ends up helping them and in a great way, I'm like, that's something people should know. Maybe it'll help someone out there. It might not help me, but it could definitely help someone else. Mm. And so that's been my favorite stuff so far.
What has been the most challenging conversation that you've held in front of the cameras?
The most challenging. To be honest, I haven't had any of those yet. Mm-hmm. I've had activist stuff on there. I've only had the, like, really eccentric. Not really eccentric, because, like, I agree where she's coming from, because it shouldn't be considered eccentric or counterculture. But like, I hasn't aired the episode, but this is like someone who's an anal artist, and she uses sexuality, sex, and everything taboo to an artistic to make political points out there or get people to open their mind. So it's been very interesting, mm-hmm. approach to stuff for me. But I've, like, the hardest thing to talk about, I haven't had yet.
Okay.
The political so far are the ones that I have, like, sort of a hard time, but I have I guess I'm just okay with making myself uncomfortable, that I'm like, oh, I can't do this. I'm very uncomfortable. It's like, okay, I'm uncomfortable. I'm like, why are you uncomfortable, Suzanne? If you're uncomfortable, there's a reason why. And now you need to, like, sit down with yourself and figure out why. Because it's not them. They're just talking about their perspective. It's you right now that's feeling uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, let me ask you, you use the word activism, activists on the program and so forth. And I know that that term can also be used for those folks who go out and they picket and they yell and they scream and carry on and so forth. And then in some cases it degenerates into violence and destruction of property and injuring of other people, which I've never understood. I've never understood how destroying your neighborhood, especially if you're living there and you have a strong opinion about something, especially after, for example, what happened after the election and so forth, I've never understood how that is actually going to help your case. I've never seen that work in that respect. And I'm wondering, is there a difference between that and activism from your perspective?
Well, I think because you also have to think about like activists who were like Malcolm X, and you have to think about how he approached it. He wasn't exactly the most like peaceful protester, but he definitely got things done, and he was a big approach for the dealing with segregation and all those aftermaths that happened after the Civil War and slavery and this and that. Those activists definitely he was considered kind of aggressive, kind of like those people are considered. And then I'm pretty sure there's stuff that Martin Luther King did that weren't considered the most peaceful. So you have to consider also how frustrated these people are and how let down they were. So I kind of understand where that frustration is coming from. But I could also see where people confuse civil disobedience with being overly aggressive. Because, like, civil disobedience is, in a way, I guess, like, it's a peaceful, let me put quote-unquote peaceful protest, but it's kind of refusing to do something that you disagree with.
Right.
Out of protest. And if you read David Thoreau, it's a very, very hard read, but very interesting on what they do. And some of them, you would say, well, that's breaking the law. I'm like, well, that at the time was civil disobedience, but breaking the law at that time was a way of being disobedient to get a point across.
Mm-hmm. Now, but there's a difference between civil disobedience, i.e. breaking the law in that fashion,
and
tearing the place up, tearing your town down.
I definitely say there is a huge difference because, like, I know there's activists who actually just use the stuff they have, like, you know, radio shows, TV shows, or just going to committees and just speaking their mind and protesting and, you know, doing, you know, following the regulations. And then there are people who are just breaking stuff and whatnot. I would say I can see, like, both point of views of, like, they're very angry, they want things done, and they're exhausted, and they've been, you know, hurt for years. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I know there are some people who don't really read what's going, like, they pick a political movement, they go with it, they don't have all the information that's going on in that political movement, all the things going on all sides, and they are like, and I know some people, well, this is civil disobedience. Well, have you actually read civil disobedience? Have you read what Gandhi did? Have you studied these activists and what they've done and truly know the works they've done? So there's a difference between being activist and a well-informed activist or a political person and then a non-informed one.
Yeah.
And I think there is conflict because you get so many people that do want to do stuff and, you know, maybe their intention is good and they may not have all the information.
I know that back in, what was it, 1982, or no, maybe it was 83, when the movie Gandhi came out, that was one long movie too, by the way. it's the first movie I'd ever been to where they actually took an intermission. Mm-hmm. And I remember the scene where they were, and this was part of the civil disobedience, they were at the beach making salt. Mm-hmm. And one of the first thoughts was, how do they do that? Mm-hmm. I need to find out how it is that they're making salt. I know there's salt in the water, okay, but how do they extract it and so forth? Mm-hmm. And I thought, really? You British are upset over the fact that they're making salt? You'd think that you'd be happy with the fact that they're being somewhat self-sufficient. Well, of course, it was eating into their economy, mm-hmm. their economic importing and so forth. But I thought that's very interesting that you'd be civilly disobedient through the process of manufacturing something or making something that the government or whatever powers that be don't want you to make.
Yeah.
That's different as opposed to making, as opposed to marching, for example, the 60s marches, mm-hmm. you know, from one town to another and having to deal with the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, if you will, you know, from mm-hmm. those people who did not care too much for your kind, mm-hmm. you know, based upon skin color. And each seems like each decade or so we go through the same process with a different segment of our society.
Mm-hmm.
First it's color of skin, and then it's sexual orientation, and mm-hmm. of course in the 80s, of course, the whole AIDS thing. And I just find a lot of this is from whatever perspective, it's just another way of dividing us. And there's that great quote, you know, that a house divided will not stand. You
yeah.
know, and that to me has been, for example, the success up to a point. As I'm going, okay, this can't go on forever. This is unsustainable. This attitude of we got to keep dividing the public, and we'll keep winning mm-hmm. what we want. It can't go on forever. You know, I mean, it's only been a year, and I'm already tired of it.
Well, yeah, and well. Then you also have to consider, like, how many of the issues that are arising now have been ignored. And I'm not saying, you
know, that's a good point. I've heard that,
yeah.
too.
Because, like, I know there's a lot of issues from the left and the right that they feel have been ignored. Like, they feel that people who are, like, not even middle class, like, even lower the middle class, mm-hmm. You know, they don't have money and they're not taken care of. And, you know, their education is not taken care of, and, you know, they feel there's something missing. And I know there's a lot of, like, topics talked about that in the right. And then on the left, there, you know, there's people like me who are queer, or African-American, Hispanic, whatever, who feel that, you know, the racism or the homophobia or biphobia or whatever mm-hmm. is not being really acknowledged. So the problem right now is, like, there's a lot of people from all sides that they don't feel being heard. So you're getting all these protests because there's years of exhaustion of not being listened to. Mm-hmm. And, like, the problem is, like, no one's listening because we're too busy. Like, right now, it's like, well, someone needs to hear me. We're desperate.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It is, like, it's a reaction out of desperation with very valid desperation. And so the problem right now is that we haven't sat down and tried to acknowledge and validate these issues. We've been trying to put it under the rug. So that's where you get violent protests, mm-hmm. where it goes beyond civil disobedience and becomes a more violent protest, or even, you know, promoting things like genocide, which is, like, really not cool. But, like, you get things where people are so exasperated that they go to places they wouldn't go to. Because a desperate person is not going to go to the most rational place.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I know all of these aspects are, for a lot of folks, they're very difficult to deal with because, mm-hmm. you know, it takes some thought. I just kind of throughout my life have thought of a lot of these different things from what I least I think is a relatively rational and logical perspective. I don't have all the answers. You know, but, I mean, I think about one in particular. I usually put it this way, you know, if I were king for a day
mm-hmm.
and we were headed towards cold and flu season, as soon as you started hearing about outbreaks, I'd shut the airlines down for a week. Mm-hmm. Nobody travels so that it doesn't spread.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, that just makes sense. If you stop it, in its tracks and let the people go through the process of healing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that week is over and everybody's back to health, open them up and away you go. Because, you know, you hear the statistics all the time about the millions or billions of dollars that are lost through people being out sick.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you let them be sick and let their immune systems take care of it, if mm-hmm. if their immune systems aren't weakened,
mm-hmm.
then they're stronger internally,
mm-hmm.
And they get back to work in a week instead of having to go to work sick. They're infecting everybody else. You know, you have one employee who comes in and infects the other nine. And now your place is shut down for a week to 10 days to 2 weeks. You're not making any money. Nothing's happening. And the economy suffers because that seems to be an important factor for a lot of folks. Just like with the fires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the smoke and we don't have the tourists and a lot of shops are staying closed because nobody's there. So what's the point of being open? That's got to hurt.
Well, it does. And I agree. But like the problem is like I know that businesses don't function on individual thought, then more of like what would be beneficial for the business. And sometimes that conflicts. And not that I agree with what businesses do in that sense. I agree more with what you're saying. Give mm-hmm. the people the time they need to recover. But unfortunately, that's not how
I know
it functions.
Yeah.
Because I know. And then there's situations like me. I'm a caregiver. And sometimes I may be the only caregiver there to cover that shift. Mm-hmm. And it's not that, you know, my workplace is like, we want to overwork you or we want you there or we want you. It's just like maybe another caregiver got evacuated and I'm not evacuated. So now I have to cover that.
Right.
And that's perfectly fine because like the people we're taking care of, they can't really, they need us to mm-hmm. help them with their situation.
Exactly. Exactly.
So there are situations like healthcare, like caregivers, doctors, emergency response, firefighters and whatnot, that covering that shift is, you know, that is someone's life. They mm-hmm. depend on you taking care of maybe yeah. their daily needs mm-hmm. or that surgery that doctor needs to perform. So there are like those unique jobs that like losing a person is very detrimental, not just financially, but also health-wise on who's being taken care of.
And when you start taking a look at the bigger picture, well, why is that person out? Are they sick? Were they evacuated? And on and on and on. Well, now you step in and you say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and carry the load for as long as I can without injuring myself, you know, mm-hmm. making myself sick. And I'm going to do my part mm-hmm. to try to help other people to do what they need to do. You know, when you start doing that, instead of getting upset over, oh, they're not here, they should be here. It doesn't matter whether they're being evacuated or not. It's like, and if you were being evacuated, using that as the example,
mm-hmm.
You know, how would you feel if you still had the added pressure, you still had to go in and go to work?
That would be frustrating because, like, as a caregiver, like, if I have to, if I'm in, like, a situation where it's a voluntary evacuation, obviously you don't have to leave, and I still have to work, that means when it does become mandatory evacuation, I have to evacuate the clients as well as me, and probably I'm going to be the last one leaving because obviously my clients are far more important and they need to be safe. And even for me, I want my clients safe first and then I'll take care of myself. So, you know, it's a hard situation, but I also say as like a caregiver and someone in healthcare or a doctor, that's also part of that's the name of the game. That's kind of what you committed to. Sometimes you're going to put yourself in situations where you have to put the good of someone else before your own because that's part of the job.
I'm fortunate that I haven't had to do it, but on very rare occasions, but I still remember back in the 80s and I was the operations manager for a station and we did 8-hour shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the day shift, and we had people doing the night shift and the evening shift. And one day, my relief mm-hmm. was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to work a second 8 hours. And I called a guy that was coming in at midnight. Said, hey, can you come in a little early? Because, you know, I've been working 16 hours. Turns out he was sick, too. Mm-hmm. So I had to work a straight 24-hour shift. And I wasn't feeling that great either.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, as I got into the daylight hours of the next morning, I actually was feeling better. I don't know why it was that, you know, being there and what have you helped, but for whatever reason, by pushing through, I felt much better.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I got relief that next morning mm-hmm. and was able to go home and get some rest. But, you know, sometimes that's just what you have to do. You know? I mean, I could have left at the end of my shifts saying to the boss, look, I can't work anymore. I got to go home and do this and that and the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, I didn't have to rush home. I mean, it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's what we need to do. And to have that level of understanding
mm-hmm.
of and that compassion for other people and what they're going through. And hopefully it isn't something frivolous, like I just didn't feel like coming in. I had one guy call me up after heavy rains and everything saying, well, I can't get there because all the roads are flooded coming in. I used to bicycle into work, and I'd have to go down the muddy road to the transmitter site, which is where we worked. And I said, no, I'm here, and I got here via bicycle, so you can get here. Find a way around. And he eventually did. He wasn't happy about the fact that I forced him to come in, but he found a way around, and we continued on. But it is that give and take, and that compassion and understanding. And, of course, as I'm sure you've experienced this through various emergencies that you may have gone through in your own life, the level of understanding and compassion and support that kind of comes out of the woodwork from people you don't even know.
Yeah.
You know, which is, you know, it sort of renews your faith in humanity.
It does. And it's been, I have to say, I know that sometimes when I'm off a shift, it seems like I'm epically exhausted. But like as a caregiver, I do love what I do. And it's been, you meet very interesting people, very beautiful people. Some from like, you know, I had a client from World War II at some point in my living situation. And I also had many different caregivers. I even in volunteer work, I've met someone who used to be with like a rock artist or someone who was very Buddhist. And so you get these very interesting perceptions. And it's just, like, if you love caregiving, it's very interesting people to see them.
Suzanne Obando is my guest here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're going to continue our conversation. Don't go away.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. We're here with Suzanne Obando. She is we'll call her a cable television personality. She has her own public access program. What's the title again?
Alternate Perspective.
Alternate Perspective, dealing with spiritual, metaphysical, activist types of subjects and so forth. And you mentioned that one of the people that you are going to have on your program, Mark McIntyre, we've had him on this program before, talking about a lot of the same kinds of things from a philosophical standpoint. And I refer now most of the world's religions, I refer to them as philosophies because that's really what they are. It's one of those things where, as I've talked about on this program before, you have to find that which resonates with you.
Yes.
That's paramount. And if it doesn't, you shouldn't have anything to do with it.
I definitely go with that. I'm like, if it doesn't resonate with you, then don't do it.
Yeah. Do you have a particular leaning philosophically?
I'm studying root work, which I have an episode which you can see on my alternate perspective dealing with hoodoo. And root work is pretty much hoodoo. And hoodoo is an African-American folk magic. So I'm studying that, which I find very interesting and fascinating. I also have a very shamanic approach to my spirituality, but that's because like my family does have Colombian indigenous roots. We're Colombian. They come from indigenous tribes, so there's always been a shamanic indigenous influence in our family. So there's always been that in my life. And then it's been just a mixture of those two. And then I work with a goddess that's not common, but it's a Celtic goddess named the Morian.
Oh.
And that's the one I work with. I just started working with her because one day came in my dream and I was like, who is this person? Researched it, very interesting, and started researching more. I met a priest that works with a Morrigan and another priestess, and they are very fantastic people. They do their own activism dealing with human rights and whatnot. So it's been a very interesting approach. So it's a very, I guess, eclectic mix there of what I do. And it's very unique to me, I guess, my spirituality with a lot of influence. I also practice yoga and meditation. So there's a bit of that in there because I think it's important to know your body and have, your mind, body, and soul kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
I consider myself a metaphysician, but I'm also a student of all of the different philosophies out there and the ancient wisdom teachings, and am trying to learn more about each of them. I've even had on this program, I did a program with a couple who were of a particular philosophy whose name I did not mention until the end of the interview, because I knew that if I did, those people who were listening would turn them off right away, and they might have recognized some of the trappings of that particular philosophy. But at the end, I said, yes, these folks are Scientologists, because I felt it was important for people to know where they're coming from. Doesn't mean necessarily you're agreeing with them, and just because I have folks on the program doesn't mean I agree with them. But I'm trying to better understand where people are coming from, and a lot of times why they believe what they believe. What is it that drew them to that conclusion that this is the path that they're going to take? I've taken a number of different paths down through my life. I was a Baha'i for about a year and a half.
My best friend was too,
and I loved it. I mean, it was wonderful. I just couldn't stay because I felt that I couldn't make the final step that they wanted me to, and that I had also joined under false pretenses, and that was that I was looking for a group that would accept me, and I didn't feel that that was appropriate to become a member of this particular faith, or any other for that matter. You know, just because you need a group to belong to doesn't necessarily mean that you believe in the tenets of that particular philosophy. By the same token, I also know too that as a Catholic born into a Catholic family, I learned too that not all Catholics believe exactly the same thing.
No,
any more than all Muslims or all Christians or all Jews or whatever philosophy you want believe exactly the same thing.
Yeah, no, because like in Colombia, like my mom is Catholic, but as I said, there is this very shamanic influence in Colombian culture that, like, if you're Colombian and you don't notice it because this is normal, and then once you decide to, like, I guess, sort of look from the outside in, you kind of realize, I'm like, oh, like, I didn't know there was this heavy influence dealing with shamanism and having power animals and working with them and working with the plants and certain allies and plant medicine and all of that. There even in Colombia, there's curaderas who are I guess that's their version of a shaman or someone who's an energetic healer, or shamanic practitioner. No, that's better because a shaman comes from an actual tribe. But because there is a lot of indigenous roots in Colombian culture, there is a lot of that influence in Colombia. And really, there's a heavy influence in my family because they come from my great grandmother comes from Tolima. So, yeah, it's very different in different Catholic cultures, because also the different culture and cultural background influences how that Catholicism comes out.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I was also exposed to the Eastern Rite of the Catholic Church, Byzantine, with my first wife, and that was fascinating to me. It was Slavonic. They actually did the liturgy in the Slavonic language. I even have the book, the liturgy, hardbound liturgy at home. Which is interesting. I think some of it is translated in English as well. You could go 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and today, and it's exactly the same. In that level of repetition, even though the homilies might be different, the sermons might be a little different depending upon the times you're in, but the liturgy itself is exactly the same. And yet the incense and the candles and the ceremony and the ritual and the tradition, I love that. I think we need more of that in our lives, depending upon, you know, what you want, incorporating those kinds of things into your daily routine, if you will, I think is extremely important, because there's a certain element of centering.
Oh, about yeah. No, I definitely agree, because I have my altars. I have two altars at home.
Really?
I have one ancestral altar to honor like ancestors, and then I have my personal altar, which like honor the deities I work with. And I burn incense to like honor them and do meditation. Currently I've been burning camphor in my room to just clear the air, because like certain incense do clean the air and help relax. Like there is medicinal value behind certain incense. because camphor, like for with the smoke, mm-hmm. I've been just burning, like have a huge block of camphor and cutting it in four and just burning just little bits and pieces of it to just clean the air from the smoke in the room.
Yeah. Well, I know that that's one of the things that I've actually enjoyed about the Catholicism is the incense and that fragrance. I think I don't know what it is. It might be
frankincense and myrrh, probably.
Okay. And there's just something about it. Although when I was attending one service, and it was a very warm February, I almost passed out because of the heat and the smoke from the incense. But again, I think these are wonderful things to incorporate in our lives if we can, to give us some kind of grounding a little bit, you know. And it's going to change from time to time. We're going to transform and transcend and transition from one style to another. And again, it's what works for us. What's what works for us?
Yeah, definitely.
You've been doing the television program again for how long?
I've been doing it since August.
Since August?
Yeah.
And you've mentioned a few of the folks that you're going to have on your program or ideas for topics that you're going to be covering. Is there a subject that you haven't covered yet but that you would like to?
So I've done a lot of death education, so I want to start incorporating stuff dealing with different death and dying rituals people do in different spiritualities. I would love to start incorporating that into the show. I also want to get someone who does Palo Mayombe on the show, because I already have someone who did Santeria. I'm trying to get a hold of people who do Palo Mayombe and get that into the show. It's been really hard because they tend to be very private.
Give me a thumbnail sketch of what that is.
So Palo Mayombe, from what I know, it's a Cuban African influenced religion. So when you get first initiated, there is this called scratching. So they actually it's gonna sound intense, but they actually cut a little bit with your skin in initiation. You dedicate to these different spirits, from what I know, and in some of the books that I've read, they're earth-based, but there is a heavy influence with the spirits of the dead. So what they have is like this like cauldron, which is filled with dirt, sticks, and whatnot. I don't really know exactly what's there, because mm-hmm. when you're initiated, you learn all that stuff that represents these different spirits that you're working with. And so with that, it helps you with whatever conditions, and it's a religion, you know, it helps you with your spirituality and what you need, and dedications. Obviously, from what I read, it's very, like, with certain deities, it's a lot of care and a lot of offering work and a lot of dedication to be involved in that. And like many different spiritualities have that, like with, if you deal with the fae, if you believe in the fae or the fairies, as mm-hmm. they call it, if you read Irish mythology, if you're going to dedicate an altar to a fairy, you have to make sure that you're constantly giving milk and honey at that altar to please the fae.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so like in this religion, you have to maintain this cauldron, doing offerings and all that work. But it's a very African, Cuban-based religion.
I often wonder where many of these different philosophies come from, the roots, where they spin off. Nothing is created in a vacuum. I learned that especially when I was working for the Christian station. I said, you know, well, Christianity didn't come out of a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
There was Judaism was before that.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other influences, I'm sure, around the region that influenced what Christianity mm-hmm. became at that time and how it's changed over the centuries, as well as any other philosophy. Again, they don't come out of a vacuum. It just doesn't mm-hmm. appear, and this is it.
Yeah, from what I read, because I got this book recommended by someone who is a practitioner of Palo Mayombe, and from what I know, it's a strong influence from the Congo, that religion, because, yeah. So that's where it came from. and then eventually got incorporated into the Cuban culture, and it became an African-Cuban religion of Palo Mayombe. There's different versions of Palo. Palo Mayombe is one. There's two other ones. I can't really pronounce them because I'm not really knowledgeable. That's why I want someone who is a practitioner, who is a palero, to come here and goes like, tell me what you do. This sounds really interesting. So I'm just giving you a glimpse, and this is barely a glimpse, and I don't feel it's a very good one. But it's very unique. It comes from the Congo. Some people who get involved in Palo Mayombe get involved in Santeria first, get scratched and then get into Santeria. And they're very opposing coins, actually. Mm-hmm. Very different. From what I read, they actually come from tribes that were conflicting with each other, and somehow they've, in this day and age, now you get people who are paleros and santeros, so that's very interesting.
This whole aspect of researching these different philosophies and seeing the similarities, seeing the connections, as well as the differences, and why mm-hmm. people choose one over another, that kind of thing is interesting. I don't want to say argue the point, but when I think about, for example, Jesus and Christianity, and thinking, well, if I really want to be a follower of Jesus, I don't want to be a Christian. Mm-hmm. I want to be a Jew, because Jesus was a Jew.
That's true.
But the phrase Messianic Jew would be the term in today's language, because he was, as the stories have been told, he is the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, traditional Judaism does not teach that, that he is not the Messiah. He was a prophet, but he wasn't necessarily the Messiah that was promised for, you know, whatever the reasons. He didn't meet all the criteria, you know, down the list. The top 10 things that you've got to be, he wasn't it.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes more sense. Plus the fact that the word Christian, from what I read in history, was a derogatory comment used by the Romans.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's very interesting, because speaking of that, like in Santeria, it's really called Lucami, but Santeria is now the common term people use. But apparently, from what I learned from the Santero episode, it was a derogatory term they use to say, oh, this is just like not important stuff, not serious stuff. But now it's became something that is used commonly by people who are in Santeria. So they've, I guess, learned to embolden the word into something that's empowering.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting on that, too.
So you plan on doing these television programs for some time to come?
Yes, because there's plenty of different spiritualities and perspectives in the world. I'm pretty sure that there won't be a day that I'm like, oh, there's no more perspectives out there, I think. There's plenty out there.
There are almost 8 billion people.
Yeah.
And so there are at least 8 billion perspectives.
Yes.
You know? So it should be very interesting. One of my favorites, of course. I have two, actually. One is interviewing rabbis.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing the level of education they have to go through to become a rabbi is just unbelievable. And the conversations that I've had with them have just been so enlightening, if you will. And then interviewing atheists has been very interesting, because what I found is that they are as spiritual and have a moral compass as much, if not more so, than some people who have a belief in a God.
Yeah.
And I find that, and I remember that conversation I had many years ago with the one atheist and his description of his spirituality that had nothing to do with a God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow, okay. I had never thought of it that way. And it got me thinking that maybe Madeline Murray O'Hare got a bum rap, you know. I mean, she seemed to be an awfully angry woman. But I think that was because of a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm.
Again, sitting down and listening to where people are coming from philosophically and so forth, we end up learning a whole lot more about ourselves, too, in that process. Do you
Definitely.
Find that you have, in the short time you've been doing the program, that it's changed you?
Well, yeah, because in the beginning, when I was always nervous of even starting this and putting myself out there, so there was like this point in the show where I kind of had to realize that, you know, there's that point, well, if I stop now, no one will notice. But there is always that point of no return. It's like, if I go here, I have to continue for a long while. There is no point of return here. And that was when I did my first activist episode. And I learned so much on things that I really wanted to, like, that I have really had an issue with extremism, but I also had an issue on how the Jewish population have been being treated. There was a lot of things that I didn't know that I had conflicts with the left, that until I started doing my show. And I disagreed with, and like, you know, there's plenty that I agree with them, but there was a lot of stuff I disagreed and wasn't happy with how they were doing. So that was interesting learning that new perspective about myself. But also, like, spiritual wise, meeting the root worker was definitely very interesting, and getting their perspective on root work and Santeria, because I did the Santeria and the root work at the same time. So getting their perspective, and even their perspective on, like, being sick or medical issues, it was interesting hearing their perspectives and their solution for that. And so it definitely gave me a new train of thought of approaching, I guess, healthcare with, like, Western, mm-hmm. but also something alternative, because to me it kind of gave me that new thought of, like, maybe if I do something more holistic of, like, yes, Western medicine, but also something else. And that was something that I would have not considered. I would have been like, healthcare would have been like, just purely Western. Well, give me my meds and I'm good.
So, now, I ask this question based upon where you are today. Mm-hmm. Are there any subjects that you don't want to deal with?
Actually, no. I think it's important for me that whether it makes me severely uncomfortable to put my hands in the dirt and do it and get out there. I'm like, if I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, that's what I need to do.
Yeah. For me, there is one.
There is?
I made the decision back actually in the 80s mm-hmm. that I would never do another interview on the subject. Mm-hmm. And that's the subject of abortion. Not because I'm for it or against it, but because even after all this time, and even though we're in the 21st century, no one has moved from their position on either side. Mm-hmm. And neither side is willing to listen to the other. And so I see no productive reason to even consider that. One interview that I wanted to do that I didn't get to do had to do with, in Arizona at the time, mm-hmm. they were going to pass a gay bill of rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to have conversation from both sides. And there was a gentleman who was the founder of ex-gays, something like that, for Jesus, something mm-hmm. along those lines. And I wanted to have him on to talk from his perspective. And I was going to have somebody on from the other side, and he refused. He says, mm-hmm. I'm not going to give the devil equal time. I mm-hmm. said, no, we're not giving anybody equal time. We're talking about a subject that's important to this community.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I never got a chance to do that interview.
Yeah, that's always the hard thing if you're going to put two yeah. people. It's like sometimes they refuse. Luckily,
probably would have been better to do one half with one and then just do the other half and put them together.
That's so far has been my approach, though. I've been trying to do panels more. Yeah. Though I have to say, there was one interview I did refuse to do, but it wasn't because I didn't want to do the topic. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel that the person had adequate enough information to do the topic. Because it was like someone who have only studied nutrition and this and that and health stuff for only 2 years, and they didn't do it in school, mm-hmm. and they were obsessed with model size and mm-hmm. this and that yeah. And whatnot. And I'm like, well, model size is not necessarily the healthiest and the most honest size to be, because it's all Photoshop. And then two, it's like, you're not someone who's gone through training. And to me, and you've only done this for 2 years, so there isn't that. And you know, there are people who have only done it for 2 years that I did put on my show with their spirituality, but that's a different thing. This was more of a nutritionist thing, and this person actually sincerely seemed like they were suffering with like body image issues and eating issues. So to me, it's like, I don't want to promote something that from the looks of it might actually promote people to have self-image problems.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to back that, because I don't want that kind of mental stress on other people when, like, you know, I'd rather get an actual certified dietitian to talk about those stuff instead of someone who's like, this is their way of coping
yeah.
with their body issues in might not be the most healthiest way.
Mm. Another one subject that you mentioned that you enjoy talking about is, of course, and I refer to it more as transitioning, but death and dying and mm-hmm. those types of things. Mm-hmm. It intrigues me because I'm curious as to what the person, the entity, is going through once they've left the body. When a prominent people pass, sometimes I that's what I do. I sit there and what are they doing now? What were they experiencing? Where are they? And on and on and mm-hmm. on. Curious, but I'm not going to push the envelope and go there. Mm-hmm. I know people that have out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences. Yeah. We've talked about that on numerous
there
occasions.
There is even
program.
Shared crossing experiences.
Really? Now that's a new one on me.
Okay, it's where there is a person, a loved one or whoever, who is close to this person, and while the person is transitioning, they experience the transition with them and have an out-of-body experience with them and see them cross over.
Wow.
Yeah.
I need to find out more about that.
Yeah, you can
That's
look
very
it up.
Interesting.
There is actually someone who does shared crossings. I took one of their workshops, and it was really interesting to read about that and research it. Yeah. So, yeah.
I may have to look into that too as well. Suzanne Obando, I thank you so much for joining us here on the program. Mm-hmm. This has been terrific. If people wanted to get in touch with you, you have a website that people could go to?
There is a Facebook called Alternate Perspective. You can you just write it alternate and then perspective and you'll find it. You could also find me under Suzanne Yvette Obando, and you can find my Facebook, and you'll definitely see my page on my Facebook, or you could send me the thing is like, yo, what's your stuff? If you talk like that, I'll send it to you.
Very good. Well, before we let you go, I have three final questions for you. And again, I thank you so much mm-hmm. for taking so much time to share with us today. First question is, who is Suzanne Obando?
Suzanne Obando is just a person who's trying to be a better place, just an ordinary human doing the best she can do in her, doing the best her, the best version of herself. In the best way she could do it.
Okay.
And sometimes not, you know, I have my moments.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I am hoping that there's like two things I'm hoping for. I'm hoping that the people who need this spiritual information activists or whatever information get what they need and the resources that they need to find what they need in their life. And then the second thing, and I'm hoping with all this information out there, people have a new understanding and appreciation for the different types of humans that are in the world.
Mm. And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose? I think it's just like doing what I'm doing the show, getting the information out there, doing my spiritual practice and helping people helping people in the unique way I can.
Suzanne Obando, thank you again for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.